Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Looking for your next getaway? Come experience Laurel, the city beautiful. From amazing local restaurants and unique shops to historic charm and fun attractions, Laurel has something for everyone. Plan your visit today at laurelms.com and discover why Laurel is worth the trip.
It's Mississippi's Radio Happy Hour.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
You're listening to Good Things with Rebecca Turner.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
Bringing you the good stories of Mississippi's people, places, and things to do. Now, here's Rebecca.
Good afternoon, Super Talk Mississippi. You're tuned into your Radio Happy Hour. That's the Good Things. I'm your host, Rebecca Turner, and I don't forget, you can listen to Good Things. We are streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Super Talk Mississippi app and your local Super Talk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us too. We are on that computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Super Talk TV, and I encourage you to do so today because we've got a special treat for you that you might want to see. Joining us today is Will Pigott. He is a sword enthusiast and collector and lover of history. He's brought some of his favorite things from his collection to talk and share with us today. He's also a friend and a fellow strongman competitor, but not about that today. But welcome, Will.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
So me and you got to know each other through the sport that we love. And then instantly, you know, you follow on Instagram and the socials. And I started seeing you post these videos of you playing around in your backyard with swords, with medieval swords. And I thought, well, that's not every day that people enjoy that activity in their backyard. And so I had to dig in more to this for you. So when did you first get interested? Is it the medievalness of it, or is it actually just swords in general? How did you find yourself first in this kind of world of collecting swords and things?
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. And I think it's something that no one really wakes up and they're like, you know what? I really like 1250 medieval Europe, right? For me, it really started from a young age with just kind of any introduction into medieval fantasy. And so things that aren't necessarily historical fantasy. So like Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. is medieval fantasy, but it's not historical. It's fantasy, right? Having such a love of that, being exposed to that from my parents, we all were huge into fantasy in our house. And then gradually as you get older, you're exploring things. I was able to collect my first sword in high school. My parents bought it for me.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So what was it?
Oh, golly. It was some little... It was a very cheap stainless steel cross between a long sword and a short sword, which is not historical at all. And stainless steel is typically a bad metal to use for swords for a variety of reasons we can talk about. But I love it. I cherish it. I still have mm-hmm. it.
And did they recognize that you at least had this like passion for it? And kudos to your parents for at least scratching that itch for
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think a lot of people may hear their son say, you know, I'm interested in something that's potentially dangerous. Because at the end of the day, these are weapons, right? 100%. But as with many things in life, they can be enjoyed safely. And so I was super appreciative of my parents. They still sometimes think, man, how crazy was it that we bought you that when you were, I think I was like a junior in high school.
It's no different than others getting their first rifle or their first, you know, bow or whatever it may be. I mean, I think our daughter was 7 or 8 maybe when she got her first rifle to go hunt with, age appropriate and all the things. Mm-hmm. So, I mean... Mm-hmm. A little different just because it's sharp around the edges, but still kind of the same, you know, same thing, same vein. If you teach responsibility, kids can be introduced to a lot of different things. So where did it go from there? Was it just more of like diving into the actual history around the, so out of the fantasy and into like the real realm? How did that transition happen for you, Will?
Well, I definitely started collecting purely on a fantasy basis. I wanted, like I said, from Lord of the Rings, I wanted all the swords from Lord of the Rings. I wanted Gimli's axe. I wanted, you know, Legolas's little knives or whatever he had. And those are cool. Uh-huh. But then, you know, as you mature, you explore new things. And I started to see the historic parallels because fantasy is based on life. And so Aragorn's sword from Lord of the Rings is very much based on a late medieval period longsword. And so I was like, oh, well, it would be neat to have one of those. And then as you collect historic items, you learn about, well, is this actually accurate to how it was in history? This pulls into things like weight, size, materials used for construction. So I mentioned stainless steel. Stainless steel is great for modern application because it doesn't rust, but it's really bad for historic application because it's really heavy and it doesn't hold an edge.
Would they even had stainless steel back in the day?
Not as we understand it because of the process used to make it stainless. They had a lot of different types of steel as that technology developed. So they would have started out in the early medieval period following the Roman period with what we would consider like wrought iron or a low carbon content steel. And then as that technology progressed, you get higher carbon amounts in the steel. You get the process of tempering metal, which is not only the physical components of the steel, but how you're heating it, how you're treating it, how you're manipulating it, which turns out has an effect on the qualities of the material itself. And so they wouldn't have had stainless per se, but they did have a wide range.
So where do you go to get this historical information? Are you at the, like, you know?
The Clinton Library, yeah.
Are you at the Clinton Library? I mean, because I'm thinking, well, you're, I guess you would have had the access to the internet. But even then, other than like Googling it, I mean, where do you go to learn the depth in which you have learned, Will, about swords and things?
I have been extremely blessed growing up in our modern era with so much information readily available. If you want to know something, you can. It's there. You just have to find it. I have certainly read some books, not necessarily from a library, mainly through family, friends gifting me something or me collecting it myself. But the vast majority of my knowledge comes from, honestly, YouTube. Following people, other people who are interested in this.
We have the same interest.
Exactly, yeah. And again, that's kind of a interesting progression because I very first started following people who were also interested in fantasy and moving to the historic side. And now I have at least three YouTubers that I can think of off the top of my head that are professors at universities in various parts of the UK that do this as their primary mode of study, and I'm just really interested in it. It's really dry material, but I love it.
Well, it's better than scrolling, you know, doom scrolling and doing the other things, and it's adding to your knowledge. Again, it's scratching sort of an itch. I find it fascinating too. And two, that you're just, you know, it's a hobby, right? How did you not become a history professor though, Will? I mean, at this point, since your parents started you so young with it and diving in, now I do know, I think you're an engineer, correct?
So I work with engineers. I am technically an environmental specialist.
Okay, well, I was like, well, that would make, and that also kind of makes sense as well. But yeah, I mean, how did this stay a hobby and not a career for you?
Yeah, you know, you have moments in life where you ask yourself, is this something you want to do professionally or is this something you want to have fun with? For me, it was certainly I want to have fun with it.
Yeah, it may have taken the fun out of it if you would have made it a profession.
And then the professional opportunities for a history major did not look as appealing as the professional opportunities for the degree. I got a wildlife conservation degree from Mississippi State, and I've been very blessed with the job that I have after getting that degree. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it still opens you up to still explore your to hobby a little bit more. How many swords do you own right now, Will?
I have 7 long swords. And so
where do you find them?
On, I go to web pages online and I talk to strangers. No, I'm picking.
You know?
There's most of my swords come from a company in Illinois called Cult of Athena, and they are a third-party realtor that sources items from production companies and then resells them.
Production meaning like entertainment?
Production meaning fabrication.
Okay.
So like
there still people using swords out there?
Not in a real sense, I suppose, but so there are sports. There's sport armored combat that people can participate in. They don't use sharp versions, obviously, but they do hit each other with swords. There's the reenactment community, really popular.
When did we phase out swords as our primary weapon of choice?
So the medieval period, a lot of people would say that the Renaissance ended the medieval period. Renaissance comes about 1500s, 1600s AD, medieval period ending sometime before that. But you have a huge carryover in just like the same way that we have carryover from the 1900s into the 2000s today. They had carryover from the medieval period into the Renaissance period. As far as battlefield usage, swords were very much used in tandem with early firearms on the battlefield. I believe in World War II, there were actually documented usage of swords in warfare there, I think by very few individuals, and you could argue, well, how effective were they?
Well, you bet you're glad you had it if your
right?
gun ran out.
Yeah, I'm telling you, yeah.
But stick with us. We got more with Will coming up next. You'll want to tune into Super Talk TV because we're going to go through some of his collection he brought with us here today. So stick with us. We got more for you up next. We've got to be the rulers of your world.
If you're feeling anxious about your...
Making your afternoon just a little brighter. It's Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi.
Point always with the music here on Good Things as we come back in. Don't forget we're streaming live over at supertalk.fm, again from that Supertalk Mississippi app and your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. But today you should tune in to Supertalk TV if you can, you're not driving. We've got Will Pigott here. He's a sword enthusiast and collector, and he's brought some of his favorite treats, or I guess his favorite things of his collection with him today to talk on Good Things. And I thought, man, it's just cool that you have this hobby. Not everybody has it. You're so knowledgeable about it and about the history of it. And I think more people, there's probably more people than we realize, because we've got some coming in, like the Highlander theme, or you're talking about Lord of the Rings. I think there's this underlining, it's just cool, like, to think about the medieval times, and it's ingrained in so much of our trending culture at the time. But not everybody goes out and collects it. So let's talk about some of the things you have here. So you've got these helmets.
Yes. So we can get started with this one right here.
Yeah.
I'll bring it in front. This would have been a 1150s to 1250s medieval knight helmet. It's very big. It's very heavy. You can see the eyelets here, pretty wide, offer a good amount of vision, ventilation holes for breathing, and it completely covers the face and cranium. That's by design. They did not have multi-piece construction at that time yet. They could have done it. They just didn't make that jump. And so what you see with armor across the timeline is somewhat of an evolution. Here we have another helmet. I'll move this one out of the way. And this would have been more of a 1350s to 1450s style helmet called a bassinet. Couple things to note. One, it has a faceplate
that
can move
breathe
up and down. And breathing
and
is super
something
important.
Drink
it
something.
It has a
pointed
top versus a flat top. Curved or pointed surfaces are much harder to make direct contact with. So imagine a sword coming down, sliding off the side. Another thing to note, the eye slits are much more narrow, and the front faceplate cants away from the head instead of back into the head.
You can't get poked in the eye.
Exactly. And so these are all minute changes that armorers were seeing at the time as weapons got better. Pointier, sharper, stronger, longer. They had to make armor be more effective at deflecting, stopping, or lessening the lethality of an impact. Armor won't fully protect you or make you invulnerable. It makes you live hopefully, when things get bad.
Which is a good thing, for sure. And then you've got the little chainy stuff. What's that called?
Yes. So chain mail came in. So, okay, mail meaning to be worn. You have a bunch of different types of mail. This is an Aventail. So it's got like a leather collar. This leather collar would have been bolted to the bottom
to protect
of this
the neck
helmet
and, all
and
that.
Then worn as one full piece construction with the Aventail going around the shoulders. All of armor is a trade-off between desired protection and necessary mobility. So chainmail is obviously flexible.
Mm-hmm.
I can't bend the plates of this helmet, but it's full of holes.
So something can still get through to it.
I was about to say, it has a much higher degree of something happening versus a plate piece.
Too bad you don't have Frodo's special little...
Mithril, yeah. Now that would be cool.
I want to make sure we have time for your swords, though.
Yes.
So pick one.
I was about to say, is there any that stand out to you?
Not necessarily. You can pick which one has got the most interesting...
We'll start with the big one. This is a pretty stereotypical European longsword. Very simple. It's got a sheath on it right now, and I'll go ahead and take that off. This is sharp.
You keep it then.
And so one thing I want to point out is while it is sharp, it's certainly not dangerous. It just is a thing. The stereotypical shape of the sword models the Christian cross. They had a lot of iconography and literature talking about that. From the top, you have a point blade coming down. This is a double-edged sword. Not all swords were double-edged. It's pretty thin as far as this plane, and then when you rotate it, it obviously gets very wide.
Mm-hmm.
That is an adaptation made by sword makers to give them a longer plane to have a more inclined edge. Helps it be sharper. The crossguard here is a multi-piece construction with the handle. There's pieces of wood in here that terminates in the pommel. The metal of the blade goes down through this handle as a full tang and then is capped here by the pommel, and it squeezes all of this onto the sword instead of it all just being kind of loose and
now you
just
can see
there.
When you see these things over at Super Talk TV, you recognize why most of them had to be big, burly people.
Yeah.
Number one,
yeah,
just to be able to wear the armor. And then two, just be able to do the sword. Now, in a lot of your videos online, I watch you, Will, playing around with the swords, kind of moving them and doing
yes.
them and grooving them. That feels like a workout in and of itself.
It certainly is, 100%. Most long swords would have been around 3 pounds, which I can pick up 3 pounds all day. Until you start swinging it.
Yeah, and moving it around and all the things. Okay, you got a smaller one.
Yeah, I got a smaller one here. So the one I showed before would have been kind of widespread across all of Europe. This particular sword is certainly German in origin. It's called a Messer. Messer is the German word for knife. And so quite literally, this is called a knife, right? The European people didn't have a lot of emphasis on naming conventions. They just kind of call things what they were. This is a knife. This is a sword.
It's very practical.
You know, it doesn't matter. Exactly. This is a single-edged sword. The spine is blunt, obviously, a good bit thicker. Obviously different in size. It would have had a different use. This would have been more of an everyday carry kind of a thing. It's very practical, very utilitarian. You could use it to chop wood. I have used it to chop wood, you know.
What's your neighbors think of you, Will?
They think I'm super cool.
Someone on our text line asked if you were into samurai swords. Is that like a whole different just sector of
interest?
So
think about it geography-wise. You have Europe and then all of the Upper Africa, Asia, and then Japan way over here. So they're vastly separated by distance. But Japan has its own medieval period. I don't know a ton about it. It hasn't been my particular area of, not interest, but like there's only so much you can kind of get in there. Mm-hmm. But I do have a couple of katanas. They're super cool. They're super neat. I really want to have a suit of samurai armor one
what
day.
About what is there like in your realm of interest? Is there a knife or a sword that you don't have yet? Obviously, I'm sure there
oh,
is.
Oh yeah, so
that you could actually get, or is it a collector item of some kind?
So there's So everything that I own is a reproduction. So it's made in the modern area based, modern era, excuse me, based on a historical example. So having something actually from history would be pretty cool. Like this sword was actually used at the Battle of Hastings or something. But
where would you go to get that? The Smithsonian?
Yeah. Or the Wallace Collection in London. Literally, these are, we're talking about examples of like, this is an artifact, yeah, not just a sword. While that would be cool to collect, I don't really think it's feasible. As far as things that are feasible that I don't have yet, yeah, there's a couple things, but there's not a big, huge one. I got one recently. It's called a Zweihänder. It's also German. Zweihänder literally translates to two hands, and it's because it's so large, you have to have two hands to use it. And it's got a lot of bells and whistles that I could tell you about if you want, but it's special to me and I really like it.
If you were going to take a trip anywhere around the world, Will, to like dive into your nerdiness, is there a museum? I mean, probably not Smithsonian because you're talking about Europe and such. Mm-hmm. Is there a place where you, this just like a sword mecca?
The Wallace Collection in London is probably the biggest. There's a couple of private collections across the UK that are really neat. But if I was going to do a trip, it would be somewhat of a blend of this historic information that I'm interested in and my strongman hobby that I'm very interested in. And I would want to go and look at the castles and natural stones of Scotland.
Yes! Let's go together.
Yes. What I really want is to do a tour and say, oh, this is a neat castle on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, we go pick up the Denny Stones or something.
Rhino's like rolling his eyes. He is tired of hearing me talk about Scotland being on my next list of places to do. And see, there's other people in the world that want to go pick up. Just
at least one.
Other person in the world. And I know you do a lot of fun things and you also educate too on your social medias. You're not like an influencer or trying to do anything like that. Mm-hmm. But if someone finds this conversation interesting and they want to find you and see some of the other things that you talk about and do, how do they best find you, Will?
The best way to see that is probably going to be my Instagram page. I have a lot of strongman content on there, obviously, but I've been posting more sword stuff recently. It really got sparked late last year. I got the sword that I was talking about, the Zweihänder. I made a video because I was just so overwhelmed with it. And people were like, hey, this is cool. And I said, well, if you like that, I got a lot more.
Yeah, I think. And if people want to reach out and learn more, what's your handle?
Willie Pigott, WILLIEPIGOTT.
I just appreciate you needed to look how to spell your own name. This has been a pleasure. I feel like we'll come back and we'll have some more fun another time with some of your other things. So I appreciate your time, Will.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, you guys stick with us. We got more for you. We got Movies with Tanya coming up next.
From the Seabrook.com,
Rebecca Turner.
She's smart and pretty.
Good Things with Rebecca Turner continues on Super Talk Mississippi.
To Good Things, streaming live over at supertalk.fm. It's Friday. Talk Movies with Tanya. Rhino, is this in, out, new?
This is a theme song from a movie that is 23 years old.
Today, or ish?
Or no, 33 years old.
Oh. Okay, you gotta give me a little bit better hint than that.
It's also in honor of one of the stars of the movie, the late, great Chuck Norris.
Oh,
this
forgot
is
about
the
that.
Theme song from Sidekicks from 1993.
Okay.
It's kind of sounded like Knight Rider a little bit.
Yeah, oh, that was sad news today. Yeah, for sure. I think the world was like, oh no, what are we gonna do?
I know.
But also, I didn't realize he was maybe as mature in age as he had gotten. So, I mean, born in 1940, I don't know what age I thought he was, but what that would put him at 86? I'm trying to do the math.
Yeah.
Daddy would have been 83, and so he was 43, so that would have been 86. So, I mean, you know, that's a long tenured life, and he was pretty healthy, to the end.
A testament to how good physical activity is.
To the total gym, right?
Yes. Like,
okay, Tanya, today talking movies. We missed last week, so what have we missed in the world of entertainment?
This is kind of the season where things are starting to crank up a little bit. You know, we've got Easter coming, and then, of course, Memorial Day, and then summer, so it's going to be nonstop pretty soon. But we missed we did get to talk about Hoppers, but that was number one for the second week last week. And then Reminders of Him is the one we missed, and that is the latest, the Colleen Hoover.
Yes.
She's cranking out those movies, you know, and our books, and the movies are getting adapted one after the other. And I kind of feel like we talked about that one, too.
I don't know if we did or not, but I've seen the... Okay, well, how is it doing?
It came in second last week, $17 million, so that's pretty good.
Because the one that they did prior to that was... Maybe it didn't do as well?
Yeah, it's like It Ends With Us was the first, and, of course, it did pretty well, I think, considering all of the drama. Yeah, and then we had another one. I've already forgotten the name of it.
But I don't think it did in terms of as well as I thought it would be.
Yeah, but she's got kind of a formula going. So I think, you know, they'll probably keep, as long as she's writing books, they're going to bring them to the big screen.
And the movies probably making money of any kind. They'll probably do that.
Oh, yeah. And she's definitely got her audience. So this weekend, we really just have one major new release, and that's Project Hail Mary. This is the one, I feel like it's been a year since I first saw a trailer, because they've really done a great job of marketing this one. But it's Ryan Gosling. It's PG-13.
Which means it's rated R.
Yeah. it's a sci-fi adventure, and he plays a science teacher, middle school science teacher, who wakes up in space, in a space station, and... does not know why he's there. He has amnesia. And as things unfold, his memories come back. And so the story is told. It's based on a book, a very well-loved book that came out a couple of years ago. It's told by flashbacks.
Mm-hmm.
And so he slowly recalls what happened and why he's there. And in the process, what's happened is... the sun is losing its power, and because of that, Earth is in danger of having a catastrophic ice age within 30 years. And so he is there to try to study and figure out what they can do.
Have you seen this one?
Yeah. What they can do to unravel what's happening with the sun. Mm-hmm. And in the process, he meets a friend. And it's a little alien, and he looks like a little rock, kind of like a crab rock, a crab made out of rocks. And so he names him Rocky, partially because of the way he looks and partially after Rocky Balboa. And
bringing back Wilson memories.
Yes, exactly. they figure out how to communicate, and it's a very, very sweet, touching friendship. And it made me think of E.T.
Aww.
It's like, to me, this movie has the heart of E.T. And, you know, and it's also, to me, E.T. was pretty scary in moments. This one is not like that. It's not very scary at all. I think the rating is mostly because of peril, you know, the peril. But
it's a PG-13.
Long one. Yeah, 2.5 hours. But yeah, I think it's a good one. And Ryan has done such a good job. He's a producer on this one. And he has done such a good job of promoting it. And he's put it out there that his own family, his wife, Ava Mendez, and his kids had a lot of input in parts of this movie.
What's the name of it?
Project Hail Mary.
Project Hail Mary.
Yeah.
And that's the name of the book, too?
Yes. And so, anyway, I think it's a good one. It's a nice, it's what a movie's supposed to be. It's a nice little getaway, entertaining, not sure what's going to happen, touching.
And was you feeling better than when you walked in?
Yes. It kind of restores your faith in kindness.
Well, that's a good touch.
Yeah, for sure. Like that. Mm-hmm. But if you are homebound this weekend for whatever reason, we've got a new big one streaming today, Wicked 2.
Oh, okay.
Wicked for Good is starting today on Peacock.
Are they streaming now?
Yes, so they're both on Peacock. So you can do a long night of wickedness if you want to.
That'd be like, what, like six, 7 hours?
Yeah, I think they're, it's a commitment for sure.
Okay, so we'll just do the one we hadn't seen lately.
And then I wanted to do a quick little Oscar recap. So One Battle After Another was the big winner. Yeah. I was so happy Michael B. Jordan won. It was his time. And I think that Timothy Chalamet probably had a really big shot. It was between those two. And then he messed up when he talked about
the ballet.
And I loved it. A song.
Did a ballerina come out?
Yes. I Lied to You from the movie Sinners was a nominated song that was performed by not only the cast of Sinners, but Bobby Rush and Buddy Guy and Misty Copeland, the beautiful ballerina, danced.
They used that opportunity.
I thought that was, they just really gave Timothy a hard time, and I think he deserved it. But what's really cool about Misty is she just had hip replacement surgery in January, and she was out there twirling around like...
They're definitely athletes.
I know. I mean, it's amazing.
I don't know when it'll come back here to Jackson, but we'll get pretty much like the Olympics of ballet. That is not what it's called.
Yeah.
But that is basically what it is.
I know. It's amazing.
It's on my bucket list to see.
Yeah.
To go watch it.
Yeah. For sure. It's amazing what they can do. And then Jessie Buckley won Best Actress. That was no surprise at all. Sean Penn won Supporting Actor. That was one that was kind of up in the air. I was a little disappointed he won just because he wasn't there. I'm like, you got to be there. And then Amy Madigan won Supporting Actress for her crazy
character. Were there any major snubs?
I would say the snubs were probably more about who did not get nominated. So as far as, I don't think there were any big surprises. I think everybody that won, everybody expected to win or knew they were one of the ones that had the potential.
So are we already talking about like Oscar nominations for next year, or is that something that the movies from after the show and on kind of become the new to watch movies?
Yeah, is it usually your Oscar contenders start coming out later in the year, but Sinners came out about this time last year, if I recall, so people didn't forget it. So it'll be interesting to see.
But you wondered, was it, that sounds so strange to say, was it made to be an Oscar contender? But like, there's got to be some movies that they put out that's, they think that it will be an Oscar contender, and then whether it does or not is kind of up in the air. And then I would feel like there's other movies that they're just as surprised as everybody else.
Yeah, and I think, I really don't think Sinners was ever in it for the Oscars.
Right.
I think that was just a little gravy. I think they just made something really special, something that we'd never seen before. And, you know, it's good storytelling, great acting.
And it's streaming now too, correct?
Yes, it's streaming too. I think it may be on Peacock too. So, lots of good things out there. The best part of the Oscars for me, I thought overall it's kind of a boring show. I thought Conan was great, but the In Memoriam was like one of the best I've ever seen in my life, the way they did it. And it's because they had so many big names pass, you know. And so I just thought it was really cool the way they did it.
Mm, next year they'll have to put old Chuck Norris up there.
I know. He'll be, it's so sad. Rob Reiner, they like brought out actors from all of his movies, and it was really powerful.
How they did that.
Yeah.
Alrighty, well, I appreciate your time, Tanya. You guys stick with us. We got a few more good things for you coming up next.
My name is Whitney Allen.
Upbeat, positive, and stories that make you smile. This is Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi, the Super Talk app, and at supertalk.fm.
Things. Don't forget, we are streaming live as always over at supertalk.fm. Also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app and your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. You can watch us too. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. You can also say hi on the C Spire text line 601-879-4395. If you missed our fun sword conversation with Will Pigott, you can catch that back on YouTube later on today or in podcast form wherever you listen to podcasts. Had a lot of fun with that. Super cool. Very knowledgeable. Many of you are had texted into Aaron and Meridian, said that you would love to have a military sword from the late 1700s to the early 1900s period. I saw where someone else had mentioned the Duncan MacLeod sword. I felt a little
Duncan MacLeod.
Sorry, I knew I was like I said it wrong the first time. I'm gonna say it wrong again. Then I felt a little spacey too. And then Tanya, she was sharing that when her and her husband first got married, that was a gift she had gifted him that they put it up once their kids came along, just for safety reasons or whatever. So I feel like there's this little bit of an underground kind of interest, you know, in it and sort of that way. Do you feel, Rhino, is that just a very, and not that girls can't be into swords too, that's not what I'm saying, but like masculine thing to just like see it and go, oh, big sword, want to play? Or is it because of more of like the Highlanders, the Game of Thrones, the Lord of the Rings, the things of that nature coming back into you know, our culture to make it more trendy?
I mean, it's a little bit of all of that. If you look at historically the fantasy genre, the war novel, war movie genre, those were not real big hits with the female crowd. So you had that inspiration. You had there's a breakdown between the sexes psychologically, and you see it joked about on social media a lot, where women tend to ask guys why us dudes are so fascinated when we find a stick if we're out on a walk or a hike or something. And I think part of that deep subconscious, that primal need to find a stick, feeds into the fascination with swords for dudes, because, well, a sword is a special stick. It's a shiny, sharp stick.
Yes, it is. And it can be very sharp and very different. Patrick in Louisville, can I restart the show? Yes, in a weird way. You can wait and restart it however you would like in podcast form after the show wraps up, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, or find it back on Super Talk's YouTube page. You need to set your alarm better, Patrick in Louisville, for that 2 o'clock time. And yeah, and so I think there's just a lot of interest to it. Obviously, protection and guns and all the things are an interesting topic as well. I love the history behind. I love when people are genuinely interested in topics, and as long as they're, you know, good nature topics. But I like to see individuals have hobbies for no good reason other than to be interested in them, right? You don't have to be a famous influencer or try to make money off of it or become a professional or make it your career or whatever. Just the simple fact, you know. And I think of our good friends who have been here on Good Things, who have done like the Forged in Fire, who started all of that kind of as a hobby. Now, they don't necessarily make swords, but they may make something, you know, sort of similar. Thinking of my maiden name, you know, Smith, which used to be connected to what your, you know, occupation was, and how blacksmithing and all that was a big piece of like who we are today and needed that. Again, not everybody who did that made necessarily swords, but it all kind of came from that, you know, being able to make things like that by hand and forged with fire. And it's just neat. The history of it's just kind of neat to learn about.
Well, I mean, there aren't many other things out there that were such a big part of life that were so well documented. Like, people have dealt with trying to light their homes, trying to heat their homes, trying to feed their families, trying to protect themselves. Like, it's just one of those core facets of life that has existed since people have been people. And swords, for a very long period of time in history, were the way you defended you and your loved ones. So that dynamic given to it adds a little extra oomph to just the raw history of, well, this metal stick became a more advanced metal stick, became a sharper metal stick, became... That progression is fun to watch, but the history of it's that, again, goes back to that primal instinct of this is a tool that was used to protect you and your loved ones back in the day, so it has a little bit more gravitas to it.
Love it. And again, Debbie from Ocean Springs said it was a great interview, very interesting. If you missed it, check it out on YouTube or podcast later on. But you got the Boys with Sports Talk up next. They're with you from 3 to 6. Rhino and Ami back here Monday at 2. But until then, I hope you all find time for the good things.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.